From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Tara Hills Pinole.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
Yawktown. Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, students head to the state capitol to protest education cuts and talking to your 8-year-old self.
I just want to say, hi, future self.
Also, are media outlets feeding girls toxic images?
There's this concept of the perfect woman who looks this certain way, and because women may not look that way, they're scrutinized.
And a new theater group is trying to put women's work in the forefront.
Feminist, post-feminist, construction, deconstruction, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is that women are not getting their works produced.
That's all coming up on Cross Currents. Today in Sacramento, thousands of students and other supporters converged on the Capitol to protest cuts to public education. Tuition and fees at the University of California's 10 campuses are up 21% this year, according to the College Board. Students and faculty say the constant cost increases are pricing out many Californians. Among the demonstrators were members of the Occupy movement. In our ongoing coverage of the evolution of Occupy, we've asked listeners to weigh in on the budding movement, and here are some of their thoughts.
Millie Barish in Berkeley, and I want to say that I'm thoroughly, completely, passionately in favor of Occupy, and if I weren't old and blind, I would have gone and joined the crowd, but it's not a place for a blind person. And I didn't go, but I was with them and cheered them on in every almost everything they did. When the black troublemakers, I mean, in masked, in black, came in, I was not happy. But that wasn't the fault of the Occupy people. So I thought they were sensational, and that's what I have to say.
Another listener named Marie had this to say.
Occupy needs to be totally 100% responsive to each locale where they're situated. So whatever people living in Oakland want, that's what Occupy should be delivering. Occupy should not be making up its own agenda and imposing that on the people of Oakland. That's bull. And secondly, if you eat a piece of Occupy, hopefully you'll have a very good movement.
Next message.
This is Mark Mason with a commentary on the Occupy movement, 1968 to 1972. Those were the golden years of middle-class anti-war dissent. In the U.S., we have no institutional memory, no persistence in the progressive movement, disunited, the struggle for a variety of human rights, African-American civil rights, free speech movement, anti-Vietnam War movement, women's liberation movement, environmental movement. Each of these were realized during the 60s and early 70s. The Occupy movement embraces all of these within a framework of class warfare. It's about the bankers, and it's not about the bankers. It's about the power structure of America. It's about the commons and the community. It's about tangible money, and it's about intangible ideas. Why do I own a ladder? I use it once every 2 months to check the furnace filter and do a few other fix-it tasks. Why do I own a ladder? How many ladders do we have in our own neighborhood collecting dust? How many of my neighbors do not own a ladder but need one when mine is idle? Occupy is not reclaiming the commons stolen from us, but creating a new idea, a new attitude, a new concept of communal. The commons is the ladder in my garage, but also it's the intangible sense of community that's missing from our internal cultural clock. The landscape of the culture, the landscape of the cultural, and the landscape of America. To share a ladder is radical social change, because to share the physical requires sharing the conceptual, the idea. Identity and community are ideas. We are given the capital I in I. Occupy gives us a capital W in we.
End of message. What do you think about the Occupy movement? Does it still hold meaning for you, or have you forgotten about it? You can share your thoughts with us by calling 415-264-7106. Again, that number is 415-264-7106, and we'll try to get your call on the air. This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Imagine for a moment that you could go back in time and talk to your younger self. Say it about age 9.
La 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 la.
Can I say something to myself?
Hi, self.
What would have been your biggest dreams, your favorite color, your best friends? What would you hope to never forget as a grown-up? These are just a few of the questions that KALW's Martina Castro posed to 3 fourth-grade girls, all friends and classmates at the Park Day School in Oakland. They attend an after-school art and mindfulness class at Honeymoon Studios. Martina collaborated with their teacher, Emily Frost, to record a little time capsule for each of them, an interview that would capture this moment in their lives. Here's a bit of what they each had to say.
Okay, so the day is Wednesday, December 8th, 2010. My name is Martina Castro, and I am interviewing...
My name is Mira, and I'm 9 years old.
My name is Paola Hidon Carson, and I'm 9.
Clara Holograph.
I'm 10, and my favorite color...
Can I say 2?
I like a lot of colors. I think my favorites are probably red, green, and blue.
Probably neon green and blue.
Turquoise.
So if you had to choose one word to describe yourself, what would that word be?
Probably funky.
Why?
Because I do a lot of funky stuff. I'm funky.
Creative.
Excited. Because I feel like even when, like, you're having a bad day, you know that it's going to get better. It helps to look forward to the future. So excited. I really feel excited all the time.
If you could give your parents one piece of advice, what would it be?
Don't work as hard. I don't know if they know this or not, but I want them to know that sometimes, like, most parents get kind of annoyed at kids sometimes, and that happens with me. So I just feel bad for any times that that's happened, and I'm really working on trying to. It's not like I'm bad at it or anything. It's just that I don't like when my parents are mad at me, and I don't like doing a thing. So, yeah.
So if you had to choose 3 things you might want to do when you grow up, what would they be?
Like for a job. Maybe I want to be an author. Maybe a clothes designer. Well, I don't know if this would be like a career, but it sounds kind of fun to be an astronaut. But I don't know. Maybe an electric engineer. Like to invent things that don't make as much waste.
Someone who kind of takes care of wildlife.
Just help the environment and help homeless people try to find a job or find clean clothes or find a shelter so they can be healthy instead of sitting out in the rain and sick.
Maybe I want to be a teacher. I really, really don't know.
Yeah, it's okay.
Things sound good.
So what do you hope will happen in the next 10 years?
I would probably try to live in a house that is near BART.
I hope that the oil spill that happened gets cleaned up. And I hope
that people stop getting like really cheap things that will fall apart really quickly.
So I hope that like the world where we'll like think a bit more about creating peace, and there won't be so much war and violence.
That global warming will stop, and so we won't just be covered with water.
What are three things you want to make sure you don't forget when you get older?
How confident my friends have been towards me when I feel self-conscious.
My teachers, because I like them.
And when I feel sad, just and like no one cares, just remember how people treat you when you treat them nicely.
This is always going to keep happening, so I hope I don't forget that everything's going to go up and down and not always going to be perfect, and that's just the way of life.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you'd like to talk about or that you'd like to say?
It's kind of weird, but I hate cleaning up when people tell me to.
I want to learn how to speak Spanish better.
But I like cleaning up, like, when people say, like, go read or something, I'll be like, okay, and then I'll stay in my room and I'll just, like, kind of clean up my room and then go read.
I just want to say, hi, future self. I don't know what you're going to be like. I wonder. Yeah.
Do you have any nostalgic stories from your childhood you'd like to share with us? You can drop us a line at our digital news magazine. It's kalw.org. Or you can leave a voicemail at our tip line. The number is 415-264-7106. We'll look forward to hearing from you. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard from some grade school girls reflecting on their hopes and dreams for the future. They all sounded so confident and grounded. But a new film, Misrepresentation, is concerned about the images girls and boys are getting and the rapid proliferation of media in the 21st century. The film notes that the reach of media today is unprecedented and more pervasive than ever before. And it may be presenting a very skewed portrayal of what it means to be female. Women are only 16% of the protagonists in movies, and Misrepresentation argues girls are encouraged by ads, TV, and films to achieve an unrealistic standard of beauty at younger and younger ages. Here are some girls talking about how images are affecting them.
We see so much in the media that there's so much negativity towards women and their weight and how they look, and it's just a representation of the pressure we feel to conform to men's ideals. There's this concept of the perfect woman who looks this certain way, and because women may not look that way, they're scrutinized.
I remember in fifth grade, I was worrying about my weight, and now I'm in ninth grade, I'm still worrying about my weight.
Me being a small person, like at my old school, I was told to like go throw up or like go eat a hamburger because people thought I was like anorexic or something, so I would like eat a lot so that people would think that I didn't have an eating disorder.
I straighten my hair just so I can fit in when I have naturally curly hair.
I have like close friends that like in between like break periods, they will go to the bathroom and put on like 10 pounds of makeup and, you know, comb their hair and do all this, you know, pampering, you know, and you're at school to learn.
When is it going to be enough? Because, you know, I have a younger sister and like she's like, like she half herself, you know, like she cuts her toe because like she gets teased in school because she doesn't have the perfect body, and it's like it's hard for me to see that. So it's like, what can I do so my little sister won't be getting hurt by the media? You know, like how long is it gonna take for somebody to take a stand?
And that is the question Misrepresentation asks us to answer.
How long is it gonna take for somebody to take a stand?
The film also notes that we now have the lowest number of women representatives in Congress in 30 years. Women make up 51% of the U.S. population, but only 17% of congressional representatives. And even women in positions of power are often judged on their looks or ridiculed for their physical appearance rather than their achievements. Listen to this montage of news coverage.
Both you and Sarah Palin are good-looking women. I mean, you're attractive, young, relatively young women.
Kagan, he's going to put on the U.S. Supreme Court. Isn't there such a thing about the aesthetics of the appointee? Let's put it to you this way. She's not the type of face you'd want to see on a $5 bill.
I think I'm going to send Sotomayor and her club a bunch of vacuum cleaners to help them clean up after their meetings.
Cynthia McKinney, the former congresswoman from Georgia, was another angry black woman.
Look at these ugly skanks who make up the female leadership of the Democratic Party.
Do you know that ugly hag, Madeleine Albright? Remember her? A psycho. She was the Secretary of State under Clinton. Remember? Like a fat moron.
And now we have the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, Nancy Pelosi.
I think if Speaker Pelosi were still capable of human facial expression, we'd see she'd be embarrassed.
Nancy Pelosi, get another facelift, lady. Another reason why it's very rare to find a woman worthy of serving in political office.
And it's bye-bye Pelosi.
And Hillary Rotten Clinton, her thinness, is no better than Dumbo with the big ears.
When she raises her voice, and when a lot of women do, you know, it's as I say, it reaches a point where every husband in America has heard it one time or another.
You get a woman in the Oval Office, most powerful person in the world, what's the downside?
You mean besides the PMS and the mood swings?
So are we increasingly objectifying women? Is it having an effect on political, economic, and leadership equality? Well, that's the subject of our next story. March is Women's History Month, highlighting the many and various contributions women have made to the world. It may seem an outdated topic. It's 2012, after all, well into the 21st century. Women's Lib is now middle-aged. But look into who's running the show, and it seems women are still overlooked. 44 American presidents, and not one woman. It's politics, it's business, and it's entertainment. Who are the greatest names in musical theater? Gilbert and Sullivan, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Sondheim, Weber, Elton John. Dudes. It's no wonder that Three Girls Theater in San Francisco chose to debut this month of all months. The Three Girls are three experienced writers and theater personalities, Suze Allen, A.J. Baker, and Lee Brady. Their goal, according to Allen, is to put women's work on stage where it belongs.
We're not so young girls, and we're writers, we're resident playwrights as well, and we just want to get our work done, and we want to help promote the work of others, and it just fit.
KLW's Artiens Kunahoff sat down with the women of Three Girls to see how they're getting it all done.
And so if you come like this, and there's a railing right here.
The cast and the crew of Three Girls Theater are in rehearsals. They're practicing two plays, The Right Thing and What About Ben, both written by founders and resident playwrights A.J. Baker and Lee Brady, and directed by the third founder, Suze Allen, who is a playwright herself.
If you don't have your own company of people working on your things, then you're just sort of resigned to write these plays and then just keep sending them out until somebody accepts your play. And we just wanted to be more in charge.
A.J. Baker says getting plays to the stage in America is tough, especially if you're a woman.
For the most part, the number of works that were actually being produced in the mainstream theater in America, I mean, last year was an aberration on Broadway, but it was 12%. Are written by women. And that is the same number, the same percentage as 100 years ago. So, you know, feminist, post-feminist, construction, deconstruction, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is that women are not getting their works produced.
Many American theaters have recognized this problem and they've established a blind submission policy. That means they choose plays based on the text without knowing the author. Still, plays written by men predominate.
Yahoo for the men. You know, it's great that their stuff is getting picked.
Suze Allen believes it's not because their work is better, It's just what audiences are used to.
You know, I used to do comedy, improvisational comedy, and the guys got the bigger laughs because there was just a different way they set stuff up. And so it didn't mean the women were any less funny. They were just different funny. So I think that's the thing. It's like, it doesn't mean that we're bad playwrights. It just means that there's a different kind of play going on. And I don't know the statistics, but I'm wondering, of the people who are picking plays at regional theaters and in mainstream theaters, how much of those people are men, so that the male sensibility really speaks to them.
Ellen says women's work gets made when it's gimmicky.
You need to be, you know, a staunch feminist, or you need to have something very political to say. And we just didn't want to pigeonhole women writers. We want voices of all kinds.
She's more like, you want to get her to be your
sister.
Sister, gal pal.
Sister.
Okay.
I'm in North Beach.
Okay. Three Girls aims to change the paradigm for modern theater. A.J. Baker says it's hard, especially in hard times.
Because putting on a full production is so much effort, so much work, so much money, that most of the theaters around here that produce full productions are going to go with works that they already know have succeeded somewhere else.
It's daunting because it's the only business, really, where your ticket sales, your revenue doesn't really pay for what you've produced.
Again? Sue's Allen.
And so you're always up against it in the theater. And so here we are in the recession. And it's just starting up a theater company. It's a labor of love.
It's a labor of love.
Voila! Relax, Manny. I have everything under control.
Good. Yeah, nice. Catherine, go back to the purse.
Yeah.
Voila, hold it up. Silence.
The three girls have a powerful interest in the arts. Sitting side by side, Lee Brady, Baker, and Allen clearly feed each other's passions.
The theater was always a social thing, sort of like ballet and opera and things like that, and it isn't anymore. It's a narrow view of theater that I want to see it if it's classical, if it's if it's a comedy, if whatever your person. It shouldn't be that big. It should be a social thing. I want to go to theater and see what happens. You know.
Baker compares it with going to a baseball game.
You're in a place surrounded by other people who are participating in sort of a ritual event, just like you. The same event you're participating in, and you're watching the players on the field, and you're engaged with them and being there. I mean, you could watch it on TV, but it's much more fun to be at, at Pac Bell Park watching
and
stuff
really
happening.
Seeing the and tobacco really fly out of their mouth. Smell it. And
all right, not everyone's a baseball
no,
fan.
I'm a
but, you know, I mean, you're a part of a social activity where you are engaged with the activity of the people in front of you on the field, on the stage. And there is nothing to replace that feeling of being a part of it. That's exactly the same as being in the theater.
The founders of the Three Girls Theater plan to have two seasons per year, each about 1 month long. They also work with young women and girls from underserved communities to help them develop their own voices. And someday they hope there won't be any need for a company built specifically to promote the work of women in the theater.
Manny, I thought you were on my side.
In San Francisco, I'm Artem Skonachovs for Cross Currents.
I've seen this letter. It's an angry teenager's fantasy. There's no way it could hold up in court.
I'll be the one who decides what holds up in court.
How could something so obviously trumped up even be admissible?
Oh, you're a lawyer now too.
Okay. Sorry.
You can see the work of Three Girls at The Thick House during the entire month of March. And you can hear all of our stories, find more information, post comments, and find more local news at our website. It's klw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hana Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Artem Skunachovs, Jen Chien, Audrey Dilling, Julia Lundberg, Casey Miner, Lisa Ratner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Cross Currents theme music is by Oakland's own John Santos Quintet. And thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option to our reporters. City Car Share is on the web at citycarshare.org. Also, thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. You won't hear us.
Really poor children in really poor neighborhoods have no habits of working.
I drive a Mustang and a Chevy pickup truck. Ann drives a couple of Cadillacs, actually.
Okay, you can buy a gallon of gasoline today for a silver dime. A silver dime is worth $3.50.
President Obama once said he wants everybody in America to go to college. What a snob.
So what if they became assistant janitors and their job was to mop the floor and clean the bathroom?
A news special on Super Tuesday, tomorrow at 5. That guitar you're hearing is being played by Ned Boynton. His unique approach to the instrument has been called cool, ebullient, and wonderful. Boynton and friends will be playing at Pier 23 in San Francisco this Wednesday as part of the Barbary Coast Music Series. It's an early show starting at 6 p.m., and it's free. To hear him and all of the local bands featured on our show, go to kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.